You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
This February, find where live art meets extended reality. Single Thread Theater presents PXR 2026, a mix of live performances, interactive digital presentations, technical deep dives, and exciting installations right here in Kingston at Modern Fuel, The Tet, and at Fort Henry. Get whisked away into immersive worlds like snowy cities, cyberpunk dystopias, musical mushrooms, and coastal shores. The conference runs February 20th through March 1st. Learn more by following Single Thread Theater on Instagram and get your tickets now via performanceandxr.com. See you there. Gotcha.
Gotcha. Hello and welcome to Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is KM on the FM, and I am your host for this week's Grad Chat. A show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs and CFRC. So a big thank you to both of them. If you miss the show at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. It is a great way to stay informed about all of the exciting research our graduate students and postdocs are working on. And today, I'd like to introduce you to Getacho Tedes, who is doing a PhD in rehabilitation science under the supervision of Professor Heather Aldersley. Welcome to Grad Chat.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it. So, your research topic is titled The Role of Community-Based Rehabilitation Programming in Enabling Formal and Natural Supports for Persons with Disabilities and Their Families in Ethiopia. Can you tell us a little bit about what that means, or can you tell us, I guess, a brief summary of your project?
Yeah, this research is mainly, it is an international project led by my supervisor, Heather Aldersley, and this project is conducted in 7 different countries.
Wow.
This project is funded by the SHERC, that is Social Science and Humanities Research Council Canada. So as part of this project, I got the privilege to conduct a study in one of the case study of the 7 countries in Ethiopia. So in Ethiopia case, I conducted my research to understand the natural support experiences of people with disabilities and their caregivers, and at the same time how organizations enable formal and natural support for this population. So just to make it clear for our discussion, what does it mean, formal and natural support?
Yes, as, I definitely don't know.
Formal support is the support provided by professionals, mainly paid support and services provided by the government. And natural support is unpaid support provided by families, friends, and neighbors. This is mainly provided because of love, network, and loyalty that individuals have within the community members. So based on this, I tried to investigate the natural support experience of those people with disability and also the natural support experience of their caregivers and how the University of Gondar community-based rehabilitation programming enabling formal and natural supports for this population.
Oh, very, very interesting. I can imagine how your research would have to investigate many different places and organizations that provide this and many different people who provide different types of support. So you mentioned that there were multiple studies in your dissertation. Can you tell us a little bit more about those studies and what the goals of each of those were?
The first study is understanding the natural support experience of people with disabilities. So I interviewed 12 persons with disabilities and also 9 neighbors. Neighbors means that the people who live around the living residence of those people with disabilities. So this study is mainly understand to what extent that those people with disabilities are receiving natural supports from their neighbors, their friends, and family members. At the same time, what are the challenges that they experience in accessing these natural supporters, and how those natural supporters could be leveraged, promoted in the community to support those persons with disabilities, in addition to the formal supporters that are expected to be provided for people with disabilities. So I interviewed this total of 19 individuals. So based on this, identified the type of supporters that people with disabilities are received from those neighbors, friends, and family members, and also how those supporters will be more strengthened in the community to provide the supporters to people with disabilities.
So within that first study, what were some of the findings that you found from your conversations with your participants?
Yeah, so the major findings are those people with disabilities are receiving from these neighbors, friends, and families related with the basic needs, that is the food support, the financial supporters that the neighbors and friends provide for those people with disabilities. And also those individuals with disabilities who are currently or at that time attending their schools, also they receive educational support. That means materials, this educational materials for those people with disabilities, especially those people with disabilities experience economic challenges. So because of this, they have a challenge of affording those education materials. So these neighbors, friends, and family members provide for those people these education materials, and also the emotional support that they received from their natural support providers. And one of the most important findings here is also information and advocacy. That means the neighbors and families or friends of those people with disabilities provide information as where the supporters are available for those people with disabilities in order to access them. And also, especially those people with disabilities who have mobility problems have limited information as what are the supporters available in the community, especially in the government side, the formal supporters. So those people I found that they identify those information and provide for those people with disabilities to seek supporters for them. And also advocate for the people with disabilities. For in the local government, there are neighbors who advocate for those people with disability that the administration, that means the lowest administrative level of the community, should provide those people with disabilities. Related with this, those persons with disabilities are not the only recipients of the services. Rather, I found that those people with disabilities themselves also provide support for these community members, for their natural support providers. That means the support is reciprocal. So based on the capacity that those persons with disabilities has, they provide support for their friends, their neighbors, and their family members. So this is the most important thing, that support is reciprocal. That means not always they expect support from others. Rather, there is a way of mutual support between these people with disabilities and their natural support providers.
So, yeah, it sounds like family, friends, neighbors, the community provides kind of wraparound supports for everyday life, but also explaining some of the supports that their friends or family members who have disabilities might need to other people in the community who don't know that person personally. But that also that the folks who are receiving this type of support from their community also give back in many different ways, although it might look different based on their capacity. And that's okay. So that's very, very interesting to hear. And also quite reassuring to know that people are receiving this really holistic support and are, like you said, it's reciprocal. It's not one, it's not one directional, this type of support.
In addition here, for example, one of the gaps that identified related with those studies is, of course, there has been different studies conducted on persons with disabilities and their caregivers, but usually I found that what are the challenges there, the stigma, discrimination of the person with disabilities are experiencing in the community, rather than identifying the other sides of the community, the assets, the resources that the community could provide for those people with disabilities. So this study is this has come up with one of the most important findings that the society, even though there is a stigma, discrimination, and challenges that mm-hmm. person with disability experience in the society, but still there are resources that we need to build on that, mm. that they provide supporters for those people with disabilities.
Mm. Yeah, so there's, like, it sounds like you're identifying positives and gaps, but also yes. how to leverage those positives that yes. are already happening in support of just creating something new. It's yeah. adding to what already exists.
Yeah.
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 Oh, that's really exciting. So that yeah. is one of your studies.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about some of your other studies and what their goals
yeah.
were?
Yeah, the second studies is how those understanding the caregivers' experience mm. regarding these natural supports. Usually caregivers' need and support needs are ignored or overlooked mm. by providing much attention to the person with disabilities. So in reality, those caregivers also need care.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
They need support. So how those also caregivers also accessing these natural supporters in the community, mm-hmm. how these community members, such as their friends, their own friends, mm-hmm. Their family members and their neighbors provide a natural support for caregivers. So in this study also, I interviewed 12 caregivers and 9 neighbors, totally 19 individuals. So the primary caregivers of those persons with disabilities as well receiving different supporters from the community. So one of the major supporters that they receive was respite care. Mm. That means providing care for their children with disability mm. is time demanding. So they need sometimes, especially in our context, there are different social responsibilities mm. in the community mm. during the happiness or the bad times mm. that in the neighborhoods or in the community, they need to go out for even to generate income. Since mm. they need sometimes away from caring for those children with disabilities. Mm-hmm. So at that time, I found that their neighbors and their friends are supporting, providing them respite care, that mm. is providing care for their children for sometimes until they come back from their short-time responsibilities in the community. The other thing is sharing responsibilities through providing material and financial needs mm-hmm. of those caregivers. Those caregivers experience financial problem because mm-hmm. of providing caregiving responsibilities mm-hmm. for their children with disabilities. Some of them are unemployed and some of them are engaging in some income generating activities, but it is insufficient mm. to the family members. So at this time, the extended families are contributing financial supporters mm. or material supporters to those caregivers in order to cover the expenses of their children with disabilities in terms of providing like education material supporters during the school times
mm-hmm.
and also providing food for the family because of that financial problem. So in general, this sharing responsibilities towards the expenses or the needs of their children with disabilities mm-hmm. is the other support. And there is a stigma and discrimination in the community even against mm. those caregivers of children with disabilities. Mm. So they need emotional support. So I found that emotional support was also the most critical support that mm. they received from their neighbors, because I have seen their story that they have been discriminated mm. or stigmatized by the community. Even they don't share anything in the neighborhood because they have a children with disability.
Mm.
But gradually, due to different interventions, and I will talk about this in the third study, but due to different interventions or awareness creations, those community members provide emotional support mm. that they accept those caregivers and they accept their children with disabilities. This was a big relief mm. for those caregivers because it is accepted by their neighbors, accepted by their community members, and even accepted by their landlords. Even mm. That means when they rent a house,
mm-hmm.
they struggle a lot of challenges mm. because of their children with disabilities. But when they access supporters, that means acceptances from their landlords, the community members, their friends, and the neighbors, it is a lot of emotional support for them. And finally, similar with the first study, there is also still advocacy and information support for their caregivers, where they can access supports for them and their children with disabilities in the community. Mm-hmm. So especially those neighbors who accept those caregivers, advocate for those caregivers to get access or support us in the community. Yeah, these are some of the major findings from the second study.
Oh, it sounds, again, similarly very holistic in the supports that people are providing to caregivers. So I know in other contexts I've heard of caregiver burnout before and that type of term.
Yes.
So it sounds like the support network of the caregivers tries to avoid this by doing things like, I don't know if in this context, but you said food support. So maybe that's dropping off groceries for the week, or bringing a meal that's already been cooked, or bringing leftovers to next door when they know that they've got additional responsibilities with childcare for a child with a disability. Or, like you said, educational supplies. Would that be things like buying school uniforms or notebooks and giving those types of things when needed? And then doing advocacy, like explaining to landlords that modifying the house temporarily or permanently is okay because it's needed for, that's just what that child needs to live on a day-to-day basis, and the community acceptance that comes with that makes those types of requests easier. Is that, would that be an example of something that you notice, those types of things?
Here in those studies, that what I was trying to understand, what was the reasons that those community members, their friends, families, and neighbors are supporting those people with disabilities and their caregivers. Even though there are those caregivers and people with disabilities, they had experience of stigma and discrimination or challenges, but still the culture, our culture promotes interdependence. We don't have just individualistic lifestyle, rather the people around there living together, they support each other. The culture values this, supporting each other is one of the culture, and also there is a religious aspect there. That means they believe religiously that they are ordered to support others who need support from those individuals. So in order to fulfill these religious requirements, even those people are interested to support those people with disabilities. And also I found that they have sense of responsibility because they are their neighbors, because they are their community members, their friends, their family members. So based on this, they develop a sense of responsibilities to support those caregivers and the people with disabilities as much as they can because of that initiative, the responsibility that they have developed. So those are some of the reasons that they mentioned that allowed them to support those people with disabilities and their caregivers.
Mm. Well, that sounds very robust in your finding. It sounds very, very deep. You've got a lot of data to work with, it sounds like. And you also did another study, though. So can you tell us about your third study as well?
Yeah, the third study, okay. In the first and in the second studies, I understand their experiences. But those experiences need to be promoted, need to be leveraged in the society. So I tried to understand how organizations enable this natural supporters and formal supporters for those people with disability and their caregivers. So I use as the case study of the University of Gondar community-based rehabilitation programming. So how this program enable the natural supporters and formal supports for those people.
Mm.
So I found that in two aspects, they promoted or enabled the formal supporters through two basic things. The first one is collaboration. This collaboration is focusing on working together with any partners, any organizations, including the community members. So partnering with those people with disability themselves, those caregivers, the community members, and governmental and non-governmental organizations, starting from the local to the national level. So this is one approach they use to promote these formal supporters for people with disabilities, especially this formal informal support is a backbone that mm-hmm. sometimes the natural supports alone will not fulfill the needs mm-hmm. of people mm-hmm. with disabilities. They need the formal supports, the services from the government side. So the government, they advocate to those people with disabilities and their families to influence the government to provide services for mm-hmm. these people in that local area. And also this collaboration helped them, this CBR program's ongoing operations of the program mm-hmm. at the same time advocating for sustainable supports for people with disabilities and their caregivers. The second approach they use to empower this formal support is mainstreaming. Mm-hmm. This mainstreaming means that including the agenda of these people with disabilities in every service agendas mm-hmm. in the local mm-hmm. governments, in the health sector, in the education sector, in every sectors mm-hmm. that are available for the community, it concerns for people with disabilities at the same time. But due to budget problems, due to this stigma, social problem, that means different challenges, but those people with disability and their caregivers have been overlooked in, mm-hmm. in different services. So this program was advocating mm-hmm. the mainstreaming of this agenda into the government services for these people with disabilities.
So would that look like something like at the local level, a preschool is going to be built, but yes. making sure that children who are preschool yes. aged with disabilities are considered yes. while that school is being built or while yes. the curriculum is being developed, yes. that kind of thing?
Yes.
Is that, okay, yes. yes, that's what I thought.
Mm-hmm. Including doing the accessibility things. Not only the CBR program mm-hmm. doing those accessibilities, or rather influencing the school to build it by themselves, the school mm-hmm. to make it accessible. In the health sectors, at the same time, providing health services for those persons with disabilities, and many of them have financial problems, so they are advocating for how they get free mm-hmm. health services, mm-hmm. free medical supporters. So this kind of thing is in every sector. There are a little details that need to be addressed, and based on the needs of those people with disabilities. So as you said, in a school setting, including the curriculum, the awareness in the mm-hmm. school, and also the physical accessibility. So all those things should be mainstream. Mm-hmm. That means they have to take the responsibilities. And when they do that way, it will be sustainable mm-hmm. for people with disabilities.
Instead of being like a separate department in the government that just supports people with disabilities, yeah. it's built into every single unit. Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah. Yes.
So this is the formal support aspects, but in the informal support aspects, this program, I found that three major initiatives that they implemented based on the cultural context of the community mm-hmm. to create awareness in the society to promote these natural supporters. The first one is coffee ceremony program. Mm-hmm. So this coffee ceremony program is just the neighbors come together and drink coffee together. Mm. It is not about the coffee. It is about just coming together. Mm-hmm. They discuss about different issues in the neighborhood. They share information. Mm. And also at that time, the CBR workers come to that program and provide awareness creation about those people with disabilities mm. and caregivers in the neighborhood. So this coffee ceremony program is organized in the community where people with disabilities are available. Mm-hmm. So they bring all those people with disabilities, their caregivers, the neighbors, friends, and around the area, and they have time together. Mm-hmm. So at that time, it helps them to accept those people with disability, minimize the stigma and discrimination, and of course, build mutual supports mm-hmm. between those people with disability caregivers and the community around in that community. The second one is child-to-child program. Mm. The child-to-child program is designed mainly for children with disability and their peers at the same time in the neighborhood.
Kind of like a coffee chat, but for kids without the coffee.
Yeah. So they came together, they bring all children around there, and they have time together, and then they empower those children without disability how to support those children with disabilities. Mm-hmm. When there is a situation that there is a mobility problem on a single individual with children with disability, mm-hmm. they brought all the children with disabilities of the neighborhood and have time to play together mm-hmm. in their houses. And also just give some times to create the environment to have to build their networks, mm-hmm. their relationship, their friendship, and mm-hmm. use that friendship from that to the school. So because mm-hmm. they attend in the same school because their villages are in the same area. So that support is not only in the village, but they also support them in the school. They mm-hmm. took them to the school. For example, if there is a children with visual impairment, mm-hmm. they took that children with visual impairment, supported by without visual impairment, go to school. This kind of support. So this is the second program. And the third one is self-help group. This self-help group is more organizing caregivers of children with disabilities. So they support each other. Mm-hmm. They share information about their children's progress, how they function by themselves and how they support their children with disabilities and then how they could support. They share information together. At the same time, they also financially support each other. And the CBR program also formally support them to provide them loans to generate income together and also promote saving habits between this the caregiver. So this is the environment where the caregivers have their own time to discuss about their income generating, their awareness about their children with disabilities, and then how they will support their children with disabilities. So the three basic approaches are found in my study, which are very important, promoting mutual supporters, the natural supporters, at the same time minimizing the stigma and discrimination against those caregivers and children with disabilities in the society.
Oh, that is really impactful work that it's you're gathering what's already being done. And can you tell us about what the role of these findings could be for the global community, especially in Canada? Because you mentioned that there's many different sites of your work. So your work is based in Ethiopia. So how does what you found there apply to other places and in Canada in particular?
Yeah, let me start from the contribution for Ethiopia, for example. As I mentioned, that we have to build the resources, the assets that are found in the community. So we have to investigate more about those resources in the society and find the approaches that we leveraged or promoted more of the natural supporters in the community for these people. And also it will contribute for the policy analysis, for policy development, considering these assets in the society. And when we consider in the policy aspect this thing is we can develop strategies in guidelines and how we formally promote these natural supporters in the community instead of only focusing on the negative aspect, the challenges, the discrimination and the stigmas against those people with disabilities and their families. So to the global community, especially for Canada, just in terms of disability related formal supporters, probably Canada is better than Ethiopia in terms of providing this formal supporters for those people with disabilities and maybe for their caregivers as well. However, there are studies that indicate the need is for intervention in terms of natural supports. This context is focusing on the formal supporters to what extent, or the supporters from the government side, or maybe the non-governmentals, but that's also formal supporters provide for those people with disabilities and their caregivers. So the experience of the Ethiopian context, especially the natural supporters, how the community could provide supporters to people with disability would be one experience that the Canadians would learn to promote in the Canadian context. If those people with disability and their caregivers in Canadian context need those natural supporters, they have to access those natural supporters. So in order to access those natural supporters, the community should be aware about how those natural supporters could be provided or how they could be promoted in the society. So using culturally appropriate contexts and adapting those kind of approaches from the global, that means in Ethiopian contexts, and trying to apply these approaches and adapting in this context and working on interventions to promote this natural supporters, especially as already there are different studies that shows that this natural supporters is still needed for those people with disabilities, because our everyday activity may not be covered by the formal supporters, may not be covered by the government or the service, the formal services. We need people in everyday interaction in our everyday activities. So this could be that means the approaches from the Ethiopian context could be adopted in a culturally appropriate way of in the Canadian context and learn what are the type of supporters that the community would provide for those people with disability. Is I think the lesson is that the global community, especially the Western societies, those who are more focusing on the formal support could learn from this informal supports of the natural supports in Ethiopia.
Well, Canada, I think, has a much more individualistic culture, it sounds like, than the kind of interdependence and community focus that you've described. Like you said, finding the strategies that work really well in the Ethiopian context and adapting them here in a way that makes sense for, like you said, a different cultural context. Well, it has been so great chatting with you. Thank you so much for doing the show.
Thank you very much.
So that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat comes to an end. Don't forget, you can download this show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. Just search Grad Chat. And until next week, this is KM on the FM.
Grad Chat. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Cataraqui on Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee land.
Today on Wings, Diana Wanyonyi interviews Stella Wangila, a disability inclusion activist in Mombasa, Kenya.
For millions of people worldwide, technology is meant to connect, empower, and protect. But for many people with disabilities, it has become a new space of fear and violence.
They are finding ways to survive, and also they are new in technology. So when they have a smartphone and they're not knowledgeable, they end up clicking every link they see. And many links that you see are there to just con you. They click, they share to many groups in the name of one day I will succeed and be independent and survive on my own. Because most parents or most caregivers see their children as burdens. Because we are fully dependent to our parents.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
There's Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Technology has transformed the way the world communicates. But for many people with disabilities, it has also created new pathways for abuse. Let's hear from Stella Wangila, a human rights defender for people living with disability in Kenya.
My name is Stella Wangila. I'm the co-founder of Beyond Barriers Persons with Disabilities, CBO, founded in Mombasa County. It came into existence after doing a very keen analysis, and I found out that there's no youth organization for persons with disabilities. So I decided to form an umbrella of youth who are with disabilities.
For that CBO, community-based organization, what approach did you take to get people to join?
Most of the youth that are in my organizations are youth with disabilities and are my friends. So I just brought them together, 15 of them, asked them if they could be interested in having an organization catering for persons with disabilities, especially youths, and they were interested. I just told them to give me their KRA and their IDs, and we registered the community-based organization.
What are some of the pillars of your organization?
My organization has 5 pillars. We have education, empowerment, climate action, and health. When it comes to health, we focus on matters sexual reproductive health and GBV, because if you narrow down to that, that is where persons with disabilities suffer the most. And one thing I forgot to tell you is that my community-based organization has a majorly a good number of women and girls.
What are some of the issues faced people living with a disability?
Major problems facing people with disabilities are most of them are not educated. So you see they are unemployed. Some are not empowered economically. Yeah, some are not even confident to speak. So we do a lot of awareness. We do a lot of advocacy to encourage the youth to be able to speak for themselves. Because sometimes you see persons with disability, especially the deaf, suffer gender-based violence, sexual gender-based violence, mm-hmm. and they end up keeping quiet because they don't know where to report, who to talk to. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of advocacy. I personally speak to youth. I'm a disability inclusion facilitator. I go from one forum to another, just speaking to youth on matters of disabilities and how they should approach persons with disabilities. They should not separate them because of the stigma, but they should embrace them. And for organizations, they should make sure that persons with disabilities are not just there for them to show that they're dealing with persons with disability. They should be engaging them fully. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Most youth with disabilities suffer gender-based violence, especially sexual gender-based violence. There was a lady, a young lady, 24 years old, a deaf lady. The deaf lady was suffering. Like, the dad was taking advantage of her. The dad used to rape her. And when you speak to her, she used to say, the only person who embraces me in this house is my dad. So my dad comes with sweets, whatever. He takes me out. So after that, he takes advantage. My mom knows about it. My small sister, the time we were speaking, the small sister was just roaming around. And she was like, my sister is spying on me, because she was told, if I ever speak to anyone about this, they're going to murder me. They're going to kill me. Mm-hmm. You see, those are the things that we're suffering. I myself am a survivor mm-hmm. of sexual gender-based violence. Mm-hmm. I personally suffered gender-based violence in 2018. Mm-hmm. I was raped by a neighbor. And I came in a family where my stepdad was very strict with me. Mm-hmm. Very strict. You mess a bit, you drop out of school. So I really valued education and I knew education was key. So I finished Technical University of Mombasa, my bachelor's degree in journalism and mass communication mm-hmm. on 2018. Going back home in Western region, mm-hmm. there's a neighbor, a young man who was working on our garden. So I brought food for the young man. Mm-hmm. But then the young man and my stepsister had planned that they wanted to marry each other. Then my stepsister told the man, the young man, you can't marry me if my sister is not married. And as you know, she doesn't like anyone from the village. Mm. She's from Mombasa, everything is from Mombasa. And okay, personally, I'm an introvert. I don't talk to anyone I don't know. Yeah, so I was quiet. I don't know what's happening. So the man came and raped me, after which I got, luckily enough, I didn't get HIV, but I broke my virginity. After a while is when I discovered I'm pregnant. Because of the fear, I could not speak to my parents. Mm-hmm. I could not tell them what is happening. Mm-hmm. But my mom just noticed I was pregnant. And as a Christian lady, I had devoted to myself that I'll remain a virgin until the day I get to get married. Mm. And this brought a conflict between me and my parents. And I was told to abort my kid. Mm. But because I refused to abort the kid, I was chased out of the house. They sat me down. My stepdad was the first one to say that we had planned with the man. And I'm like, this is not even my class. This is a Shamba boy. How can I plan with such a person? Because I'm a stepdaughter. My mom had no say. I was thrown outside the house. I had nowhere to go. I had no one to call. Then luckily enough, I called my lecturer, Madam JT. I told her, Madam, this is what has happened to me. She told me, just come to Mombasa. Find ways of how you'll get your fare and come to Mombasa. I spoke to my mom. I told my mom, I want to go back to my uncle's house. My uncle is in Mombasa. Mm-hmm. I came back to Mombasa. I struggled with my pregnancy. My uncle is just another person, because you really are someone took care of you. Mm-hmm. you end up praising that person. So I'm just accommodating you. You are an outcast. Your mother gave birth to you out of wedlock, and now you've done the same. I used to sleep on a sofa. The day of giving birth, the person who took me to the hospital was my grandmother. I went to Makadara, I gave birth. After giving birth, I came back to the house. You are sleeping hungry with a one-month-old child.
In your uncle's house?
Yeah. My uncle's wife and the kids are cooking in the sitting room, and you are sleeping in the bedroom with your kid. Because they see you as a burden. But who is God? The same lecturer organized for me to get an internship at Technical University of Mombasa. I got an internship. During the internship, I saved.
Oh, it was payable?
Yeah, mm-hmm. 20K every month. Mm-hmm. 25, so if they deduct the whatever, it is 20. So I paid my rent, I sustained myself. After the internship, immediately, I got help from MasterCard Foundation. Mm-hmm. And here I am today. My kid is 5 years old. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But still, we are not in good terms with my stepfather. Right now, my kid is in Nairobi with my stepsisters. But my dad used to call back and say, why are you accommodating Stella's child and she doesn't help you in paying rent? I'm like, dear God, all in all, it will come to an end one day, one time. Mm-hmm. Because I'm the one who makes shopping for them. I make sure they are smart. Because they are in campus. I make sure they eat. They are smart. They have everything that ladies want. I cannot accommodate my rent, pay my rent, and also pay their rent. Mm. And they had an arrears of 70,000. Mm. My salary is even less than that times 10. Mm. But sometimes I just say, God, help me, or open a way so that I can cater for whatever my dad wants. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that persons with disabilities suffer, mm-hmm. so much. So we are afraid of speaking out. I can't speak out, but you can feel like the deaf girl I was saying, she's really afraid of speaking out. You see, because what if my parents abandon me? What am I going to do? Mm-hmm. We persons with disabilities are not even allowed to have relationships. You are going to get married and then who will take care of your kid? You're going to bring another burden in the house. Or when a person with disability gets married, they end up facing gender-based violence. Mm. So you stay in a marriage for 2-3 years, the man finds another person better than you. Mm. These are things that persons with disability suffer, and they cannot speak with the fear of people will judge me. What will people say? You'll find them having kids one after the other because they are afraid of going for sexual reproductive health services. You reach at the hospital and there's like, even you, what do you want? Why are you pregnant? Such questions. Mm. Yeah, but thank God with a lot of advocacy that we are doing, the society has started embracing persons with disabilities, especially in Kenya, but there are still gaps. I am really wishing that we have schools that are not specifically for persons with disabilities. We want to integrate. We want to make sure that a child with no disability can mingle very well with a person with disability. Mm-hmm. Not in a situation whereby my kid sees a kid with disability and is like, Mommy, what has happened to? We don't want sympathy. We want empathy. Embrace us. Mm-hmm. Embrace us. See us as Stella. Don't see the disability in me because I might be doing something that you cannot do.
I'm so sorry for what happened to you, Stella. At the same time, proud of you for coming up and empowering other people, not only people living with a disability, but community as large. You know, you speaking up openly, freely about what happened to you, you're inspiring someone else, you know, and this is a very good initiative and I'm very proud of you.
Stella Wangila's childhood in Kenya was marked by stigma from cerebral palsy. As an adult, she's become a disability inclusion facilitator with Light for the World and a youth advisor with the MasterCard Foundation. Stella told Wings contributing producer Diana Wanyonyi about the difficulties she met in early life and her work for other people with disabilities. A large part of her focus now is on risks of online harm.
Can you speak about technology-facilitated gender-based violence? What does it mean?
Technology-facilitated gender-based violence is violence that is facilitated, happens using technology devices. Mm-hmm. And mostly it happens on the social media. We have TikTok, Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, Telegram. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see here is whereby, like, you are my friend, I share with you my pictures, a very private picture of mine. But then you end up sharing my pictures without me, my consent, or without me knowing. So another person sees the picture. Instead of showing me or telling me, they end up sharing. That can lead to depression. That can lead to isolation, because now I'm a public figure. People start judging me wrongly. Mm. Like, if she can do this, what else can she not do? You see? Another person can impersonate you, can use your account to abuse persons, to abuse other people, to con them, like hacking. In the recent past, accounts were being hacked. My face, but it's not my account. Mm-hmm. I call you and tell you, send me some cash, and because you know me, you send the cash. But when you call me, I tell you I didn't request any cash from you. Impersonation. You see, that is very bad, and it really affects persons with disabilities, because most of them are at home, and they're really eager to find a way out of surviving, because of what next? What if my parents are not there? What next? So they end up sending money to wrong people and they get conned. Like the other day, I recently launched my organization. I launched it on 13th. So I was meeting different people for support and welcoming them. And I went to a certain organization. I was meeting with the CEO, and I found a young man. The young man was very bitter. And I really wanted to know what's wrong, because he was a youth. My interest is in youth. I wanted to know what's wrong. And I asked, what's wrong with your staff? She said, I don't know. And she threatened to sack him. But the boy was like, you're not doing me any favor by employing me. I need to go. He took his things and left. We sat there wondering, but I told them, the CEO, let's not leave this thing here. We need to find out what is the problem. We called home, and the parent openly told us that my boy, the salary that you give him, 20,000 shillings, all of them, he takes the money project. Someone comes online and tells you, you will benefit from this, so apply and send me some cash. And because most persons with disabilities are illiterate, and they're eager to find their way out, the way to survive, they end up being victims of that. Mm-hmm. So the boy had just been paid like yesterday, and today
no money,
all of it has gone. Mm-hmm. And it is gone. Mm-hmm. You see, so right now gender-based violence, especially physical, is very minimal, but technology facilitated gender-based violence is very rampant, especially to youths.
Why are people living with a disability at higher risk of technology facilitated violence?
They are finding of ways to survive, and also they are new in technology. So when they have a smartphone and they're not knowledgeable, they end up clicking every link they see. Yeah, and many links that you see are there to just con you. They click the links, share to many groups in the name of one day I will succeed and be independent and survive on my own. Because most parents or mother, most caregivers see their children as burden. Now that is true.
Children who are living with disabilities.
Yeah, they see them as a big burden. Because we are fully dependent to our parents. Mm-hmm. There was a time I was in Nairobi, and one of us was saying, we are always important if we have money. If we don't have money, no one wants to be with us. Mm-hmm. No one values us. That is very bitter. She was sharing with me and telling me, I decided to have dreadlocks, and she has hair like mine. I decided to have dreadlocks because I don't want to burden anyone to come and comb me every morning. She has severe cerebral palsy. Yeah? Mm. If I don't have money to go to the salon, I'll be like a no one. Mm. You see? So there's still that stigma. As much as parents are getting a lot of awareness is being created, but they still have something in their heart like, this one will not help me in any way, anytime. You see, that is the problem that the society still has for us persons with disabilities. Mm-hmm. It starts at home. Mm-hmm. Like my parents, they could have not thrown me out of the house knowing that I'm a person with disability, knowing that I had nowhere to go. But since they had that cocoon of, this one is of no help to us, even if she leaves us, there's no loss.
How do technologies become tools for abuse?
One thing, the assistive devices become a tool for abuse because I might be in need of a hearing aid. Maybe I'm a deaf person. Mm-hmm. I might be in need of a hearing aid. So for me to get the assistive device, because they are very expensive, we need to go to donors for assistance. But then the donors will take advantage of that. When they give you that, they want to take a lot of pictures with you so that they can show how how useful they are in the society. Mm-hmm. Some of them take you through a lot of channels. You're a person with disability. You need that thing to assist you. But you need to go, like, let's say to this person. After this person, you move to another person. Mm-hmm. You will apply for assistive device today, but you'll get it next year. You see? Mm-hmm. But then you will have gotten used to your normal life before the assistive device. And when it comes, it usually gives you an issue of using it. There's a girl we were with her in my lunch. The girl is an amputee, both legs. She got an accident and I met her. And she was using a normal wheelchair. I assisted her through my networks and she got an automatic wheelchair. But I'm so sad to say that the same wheelchair was to kill her on Saturday. Yeah. She operated it, and I don't know how she operated it. She found herself on the road, down.
Ah, yeah.
The busy road in Tononoka.
The highway, yeah.
I can say it's God. When you're giving the assistive device to the person, make sure you train them on how to use it. Mm-hmm. Give them a guidance. Give them a guideline, a book they can read, so that they know, if I press here, it is going to cause harm to my life. Mm-hmm. But you're giving an assistive device to a person with disability and you've not shown them how to do it. Mm-hmm. There's a friend of mine also who is also an amputee. I've really tried to help her get the artificial limb. But she says, I cannot use the artificial limb because it ends up adding more problems into my life. It's very heavy. Yeah, it gives me bruises, so I cannot live my normal life. Mm-hmm. My urge to donors and to those who are designing the assistive devices and well wishes, before you give the assistive device to someone, have a talk with them, know their capacity of using the assistive device that you're giving them. If they are total blank, guide them for almost a week or so, or attach them to someone who will guide them. Mm-hmm. Because I was seated in the house and I was thinking, what if we lost our life? The whole blame could be in me because I'm the one who gave her the wheelchair.
Yeah.
What could I say in front of people? Mm-hmm. I'm also blank. I don't know how to use the wheelchair. So if someone could just take us through how to operate the assistive devices, even us who don't need them. If you teach me how to use a pencil, I'll teach another one how to use a pencil. Mm-hmm. But if I'm total blank, I don't know how to use the pencil, how can I teach another one how to hold a pencil and use it? Mm-hmm. I can't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a lot of awareness has to be created on the use of assistive devices, the different assistive devices that we have.
Mm-hmm. What gaps exist in current digital systems and reporting systems?
The gaps that exist is that in the digital systems, you can report a case, but it takes a while for you to get the feedback.
And yet it's the digital.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can also report, and the feedback that you get is like, the problem, the social media has no problem. How are we going to help each other if that is the way you're going?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Stella, what policies should government prioritize, especially for people living with disability, so that to tackle these issues about gender-based violence and technology-facilitated violence?
First, I can say we have a new Disability Act. But the Disability Act is not implemented. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Like right now, the government gives the caregivers 2,000 every month. Yeah? For severe disability. Mm-hmm. But since November, they have not received the money until now. And in the Act, it is stated that they are supposed to get 10,000. But since the bill was enacted, mm-hmm. until now, it has not been implemented. They are still receiving the 2,000 shillings. In Mombasa, we don't have a disability policy. We don't have. We've been pushing for it. I've been writing memorandums. But you see that you hear someone telling you that it is in the governor's office. Mm-hmm. The governor doesn't have money to gazette it. What is that? It is really demoralizing. Mm. Yeah? And we have the cybercrime bill that was passed recently.
Yes.
Most persons with disabilities don't know what it entails. Mm. And the government has not created awareness. There's no public participation that has been conducted concerning the cybercrime bill. Mm-hmm. How are we going to survive? I can go to the internet and search and read. What of the person with disability who is not learned? Mm-hmm. He or she needs to hear from me speaking on the layman's language, the native language, about the cybercrime bill, so that he or she can be aware that if I do this, this is not acceptable in the society.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm urging the government to create a lot of awareness on the cybercrime bill, because mm-hmm. most of us will fall victim of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why is technology-facilitated gender-based violence often overlooked in disability advocacy?
Most people see persons with disabilities that are not learned, so that cannot affect them directly. Mm-hmm. But funny enough, we are learned. We use to social media each and every time. You see the deaf, you'll see them video calling each other using WhatsApp, and they're speaking in sign language and they don't understand each other. What if they abuse each other on that conversation? Isn't that technology facilitated gender-based violence? It is. But due to ignorance, and I can say, like, you're overlooking persons with disability. You don't see them like human beings. You see them like, most of them can say, we are waiting for them just to die. They have no value in the society. That's why most things don't reach persons with disabilities.
Are digital gender-based violence laws disability inclusive?
They are not. Mm? They are not. I can see the laws and read them. What of the blind? There's no audio format of the same. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
There's no audio format of the same. When you talk of persons with disabilities, don't look at the physical. We are diverse. We have the visually impaired, we have the hearing impaired, we have the physical, and the physical has so many. There's cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, autism. A person with autism, the concentration is very low. How can he concentrate and read a whole book? But if you have a simplified one, or if you have a braille or an audio format of the same, it will be usable to all persons with disabilities.
What is your parting shot?
My parting shot is to the Mombasa governor. Please, just pass the disability policy in Mombasa, because there are some things we can't fight without the policy.
Mm.
But we have the policy, we can just state a clause and say that according to the policy, you need to do this and this and this for persons with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm.
And to the whole government, my president, Ruto, His Excellency, please ensure that you implement whatever is written in the Disability Act that you passed recently.
As the world becomes increasingly digital, the fight against gender-based violence must evolve, because safety online and offline is not a privilege, it is a right. For Wings, I am Diana Wanyonyi in Mombasa.
Stella Wangila is a disability inclusion facilitator in Kenya. She initiated the community-based organization Beyond Borders. It brings together youth with a range of disabilities to form community, support each other, and address their own issues. Thanks to All Wings supporters, including your community radio stations, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, whose events can be found through the website maternalgifteconomymovement.org. That's all one word, maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
KPP Concerts and CFRC 101.9 FM are turning up the heat this winter with a stacked lineup of shows. At the Broom Factory, don't miss out on Metal Fusion cellist extraordinaire Raphael Weinreth Brown on January 23rd. On February 14th, you can see local rockers Casador take the stage, while Canadian punk rockers The Flatliners are live on February 20th. And don't miss out on Daniel Romano's Outfit on March 13th, followed by Schoolhouse and Braden Lamb on March 15th. And the winter season rounds up with The Sheepdogs live at Kingston Grand Theatre on March 16th. For a complete list of shows and ticket information, visit kppconcerts.com.